Hi, this is J. Dan Gill. I'm the chief editor for 21st Century Reformation Online, and we're just so happy today to have David Moss with us from Seattle. We have caught up to you here at the 20th Theological Conference in Atlanta, or near Atlanta, and just heard you speak and enjoyed it a great deal.
Thank you.
Indeed. And your topic today was of particular interest to us, but you were speaking about issues related to the covenants, the two great covenants, I guess, that Paul talked about in Galatians, the fourth chapter. But great subject, great. I enjoyed it a lot, and your presentation was good. Tell us a little bit about what got you into all of this.
This wasn't something I planned. That circumstances created a need. Beginning about 2 years ago, I hadn't had direct contact with the movement. It's typically referred to as the Hebrew Roots Movement or sometimes the Hebraic Roots Movement. But I began to see contacts, acquaintances, and friends being affected by it, in some cases being drawn into the movement. And some of the things I was hearing concerned me. I knew some of the things I was being told were incorrect. Some of what I was hearing did not jive with Scripture. And some of it, in some cases, seemed to me to be setting people on a pathway that could be quite destructive to their lives.
Yeah.
And ultimately lead them away from the pure gospel and that we find in the New Testament Scripture. And so it's been I've been motivated by a desire to prevent people from getting involved. One of the difficulties has been once they become fully involved, it's very difficult to extract them. So I'm trying to emphasize more inoculating people against the movement ahead of time just by re-emphasizing certain key themes in the New Testament, maybe teaching them in new ways, maybe at some newer, deeper levels, having to do with things like the New Covenant versus the Old Covenant, the issues that were underway in that caused Paul to write his epistle to the Galatians. There's a lot of relevance there. So in essence, I'm reacting to a perceived need.
Right. Well, tell me this then. From your perspective, what are you seeing in this Jewish roots concept, and what about it alarms you? What concerns you?
Well, one of the key issues is people are being set up to be drawn away from the New Testament Scriptures as their source for right conduct and belief. They're being told that the Greek Testament, New Testament that we have today, is not the original New Testament that was first penned in the first century, that document was penned in Hebrew, that our current Greek New Testament is a later translation that incorporated corruptions from Gentile and Greek-speaking elements in the church, and that we need to recover the original Hebrew version to understand what Jesus and the apostles actually taught. Problem is that there is no concrete evidence of a Hebrew original. We have no copies of that, of any portion of that Hebrew original. So they're saying that what we have here is corrupt. It's not the original New Testament. We need to go back here, but there's nothing here. So it's setting people up to be left holding an empty bag, to have nothing to turn to for their source of right belief and conduct. And so that's an initial concern. I can see how the devil is setting people up to undermine their faith and confidence in the New Testament that we have. The Hebrew Roots Movement is not a monolithic group. There's a number of different groups in it, and they range from moderate to conservative to more extreme. But there are some groups on the fringe, on the extreme, who can no longer reconcile certain things taught in the Greek New Testament, in particular some teachings of Paul. They can no longer reconcile that with their newly developed Hebraic roots theology, and so they are concluding that the Apostle Paul was wrong, that perhaps he was an apostate apostle, and they're beginning to reject some of his writings. Now, this is a minority in the movement, but they are on the fringe, but in fairness to them, they are taking the rationale of the movement to its logical conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because besides the issue of the New Testament, the movement is teaching people that they need to observe Jewish feast days, the Sabbath, keep kosher to conform to the Levitical dietary regulations. Mm-hmm. In some cases, that Gentiles need to be circumcised. Again, I think that's more a minority, but mm-hmm. it's growing. But because they have started down that pathway, the direction they're going will ultimately put them into conflict with what Paul said.
Mm.
This is one of the reasons why they need to neutralize the Greek New Testament. They need to either kick Paul out of the New Testament or somehow change what he wrote.
Okay.
And one of the ways to do that is to claim that the current copies we have in Greek of Paul's writings are not copies from the original. They're corrupted. The Greek New Testament has misinterpreted what Paul actually said. We need to convert that back into the Hebrew, mm-hmm. and that way discover what Paul really said. And of course, we know that when we discovered what he really said, it's going to agree with our theology.
Okay. So if we find what Paul was saying uncomfortable to the view, then we kind of neutralize Paul and just get him out of the picture. And so,
yeah.
So we can proceed on. Okay.
Correct. And it's not just things Paul wrote, but he's a primary culprit.
We have then problems of there tending to be an assault of sorts on the credibility of the New Testament that we have.
Correct.
The idea that it must have been written in a different language, and that what we have now is not true to the case sufficiently. We have an assault of sorts on Paul as being a true apostle, and so either we don't have his real writings, or else if we do, then we're just going to have to say Paul was not a true guy. He wasn't true to the cause. And then we have people being drawn into the keeping of the Mosaic Law. How does that work?
Well, that's part and parcel of the program. Once you start down that path, well, they place a heavy emphasis on teaching the Torah. The interpretive key that the New Testament writers consistently used when they went back to interpret Old Testament scriptures is Jesus Christ. What God has done in Jesus mm-hmm. was their interpretive key that unlocked mm-hmm. the real meaning and significance mm-hmm. of key Old Testament passages. The interpretive key used in this movement is Torah, that the New Testament needs to be interpreted through Torah. They've got it exactly backwards.
I see.
But there's a lot of emphasis on Torah. They don't always say that you have to keep it in order to be saved or be justified. They may play a little bit with semantics mm-hmm. and say things like, well, we're not keeping the law for justification. We're just doing it to honor the Torah, or to this by keeping the Torah, it'll help us learn more. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, going down that pathway will put you back under the old covenant mm-hmm. and effectively remove mm-hmm. you from underneath the new covenant. Because mm-hmm. The Torah, the law, is much more than just the Ten Commandments and a set of moral codes. It is an entire covenant. It is, in essence, a national constitution that God drew up and gave to the nation of Israel that includes dietary restrictions, feast days, a sacrificial system, laws that govern somewhat marriages, penal codes. You've got laws of inheritance, things to do with cities of refuge. And the law itself requires that if you come under the law, the Torah, you have to keep the whole thing.
Ah, yes, yes.
And
you don't get to pick and choose.
Right. And that's a point that Paul makes at least twice in the book of Galatians, mm-hmm. where the primary issue seemed to be circumcision. Do Gentiles need to be circumcised? And Paul's one of his many arguments was that, hey, if you guys are going to go down that pathway and you're get yourself circumcised, that means that you are now obligated to keep the whole law, not just parts of it.
Well, that's something that it seems to me that folks who want to toy with the idea of practicing or keeping the law under whatever supposed guise, that they seem to want to ignore, and that is the law, if you're going to keep it, Paul said this in Galatians, but no one could argue with him. No matter what you thought about Paul otherwise, his point is true. If you're going to keep the law, you must do all the law. And that's a statement contained in the law itself. So I can't come along then and pick and choose parts of the law that I want to keep and say I'm going to do that and then ignore the parts I don't like or I don't feel like are convenient for me to keep. Does that agree with it? Yeah. Well, I think it's so interesting to me then. One of the things that I've encountered along this line by folks is, well, but you must keep the law. Otherwise, we can kill people, we can lie, we can steal, we can do all these terrible things if we're not keeping the law. But in reality, I don't think that's true. We are under this royal law, I guess as James might say, to King Jesus. He is our mediator of this new covenant. Would you agree then that our precepts come from him? He is the one, and he's quite sufficient. I used this example with someone here recently, and that is if I was in Paris if I had been there, it would be a law in Paris that says, do not kill your fellow Parisian, you know, don't kill. But if I come to, say, the United States, I discover there's a law in the United States that says, don't kill. Then I would say, well, I'm under the Parisian law. Well, no, really, I'm not. I'm under this law that is provided in the United States. So there is a royal law, as James would say, a law of liberty, if you will, but this that's provided to us by Jesus Christ, and I think Paul would argue, and I think it makes sense to me, that that is sufficient for us. He's sufficient. And if I feel like that I must go back to Moses in order to find out what my conduct should be, I've missed the principle of Jesus as the ultimate teacher and the ultimate.
Not just this movement, but some other movements I've dealt with. When I argue that Christians are not under the Mosaic law, mm-hmm. that it is not applicable to them, not that we can't learn things from it, but
sure.
I am not obligated to keep it. A frequent response is, well, if we don't have the law, then we're going to have moral chaos in the church. Mm-hmm. And that simply is a false dichotomy. Mm-hmm. And Paul wasn't arguing for a purely libertine church. His in Galatians, the thrust of several of his arguments were covenantal. Mm-hmm. He talks about how the law of Moses was there for a set period of time until the fullness of time came.
Yes.
And God sent forth his son. Mm-hmm. Now we're under something new, which in one place he refers to as the law of Christ. It has continuity with the old, but there's also discontinuity.
Right.
In 1 Corinthians, Paul wrote about how he was all things to all men, and he could be a Jew to a Jew, he could be a Gentile to a Gentile, he could be not under the law for those who are not under the law. But he qualified that when he said, Not that we are without law, because we are in law to Christ.
Yes.
And he deals with this false dichotomy in Galatians chapter 5 when he begins to talk about how we're not under the law, we're now led by the Spirit.
Yes.
This is a chapter where he talks about the law of Christ, about loving your neighbor, and so forth, about not committing the deeds of the flesh, because those will result in disaster. But again, this is what in logic you would call a false dichotomy. I've heard it from Hebrew Roots people. I've heard it from Seventh-day Adventists who do not argue for keeping the entire law, but they do argue that the ten, or shouldn't speak for the whole group, but the individuals I've spoken to claim that the Ten Commandments are still in effect. Theologians for centuries have, in a sense, set the groundwork for this, as they have divided the Mosaic law up into the moral law and the ceremonial law. The law never divides itself into the moral and the ceremonial.
Yes.
That is a later theological construct, an artificial one, put together by theologians in order to deal with a perceived problem. And there's no way to cleanly divide everything up in the law into this is moral And this is ceremonial.
Yes, that's right.
You know, it's a Sabbath day. Is that a ceremonial issue, and or is it a moral?
And the food restrictions, then, where do those fall?
Right. They were coming at the issue for some different reasons and from some different angles, but in principle, they were dealing with it the same way.
One thing I cannot picture, and I think that you would verify this, and that is that there is no scripture in our New Testament anywhere by anyone who says we are to keep part of the law,
right?
Or tells us which parts to keep. But this covenant that we're under with the sufficiency of Jesus Christ, to me, is quite clear and set forward quite clearly. And I think that's Paul's problem. Paul is saying, if you think you have to go around Christ and his teachings, and you have to go around the cross in order to get the full picture of what our covenant is about, if you have to go around them and then to do the things contained in this former covenant, then you are saying that Christ is not sufficient. He is not all in all. And yet Paul is preaching to Jews and Gentiles alike that Christ is all in all. He is our sufficiency. Everything God has for us is in him. Not him and Moses. In Jesus. Is that what you would say?
This movement tends to remove Jesus from his ultimate position as the absolute cosmic Lord of not only the universe, but in particular the church. He becomes subordinated in some respects to the Torah. But Jesus is to be the all-sufficient head of the church. Our salvation is based on what God did in his death and resurrection, not the Torah. Paul portrays the crucifixion in 1 Corinthians 1 and 2 as God's ultimate answer to evil, what God's power and God's wisdom was displayed in a crucified Messiah, which is a stumbling block to Jews and nonsense to Gentiles.
Yes.
So that is certainly an issue. But back on the law and the notion of moral chaos, in some respects, what has been instituted in Jesus, not only is it in continuity with the law, it is more stringent than the Torah. The Torah says, thou shalt not kill. Jesus says, not only thou shalt not kill, not only that, he says, thou shalt not hate. Not only that, thou shalt love thy enemy.
Yes.
Now, that is something that it is not a law carved in stone, but it is far more stringent than any law that's ever been carved in stone.
And those terms are not contained in the Ten Commandments.
No.
Isn't that interesting?
No.
Wow, so I love it. So, actually, Messiah, Jesus, who will reign in the kingdom of God, is the one to whom we look for all sufficiency now. And I think that Paul has the sense of it right. If we think that we must go back to Moses then to have law, to know that we're not supposed to kill our neighbor or other such things, then we're saying that the teaching of the greatest teacher who ever lived is insufficient for us. We got to go find these other things. Touch again on this for me just a moment, because I frequently hear people saying, well, you really can't understand the New Testament without understanding the Old Testament. So you got to start in the Old Testament. Would you go along with that thought? What would you say?
Well, it's partly true. I mean, having a knowledge of the Hebrew language is very advantageous to Bible study. Learning about the Old Testament, the history of Israel, what's in the law, what God did in the Old Testament, is important. It helps shed light understanding what Jews in Second Temple Judaism believed about things like the resurrection, the Messiah. These things are of great help in understanding the roots of our faith. On the other hand, as I mentioned earlier, the interpretive key that the authors of the New Testament can use constantly to understand the Old is Jesus Christ. And in some cases, they come up with new interpretations that were quite innovative, quite unexpected, and ones that contemporary rabbis at the time would probably have objected to very strongly. But they came to those conclusions, understandings, and interpretations based on what they now knew, because of what God has done in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ.
You know, and that's an interesting thing to me, because when you think about it, as I watch the activities of the early disciples after Jesus was taken up, and beginning with the day of Pentecost and forward, as they began to take the message out to the world, and you begin to say, okay, well, what message did they take to the world? It seems clear to me that if you follow through the book of Acts and you follow what Peter was saying, you follow what people like Philip was saying, Paul certainly and others, that they weren't going out and saying to the Gentile folks, now sit down, I want to explain to you all about Genesis and all about Abraham and all about, not that those things are not absolutely crucial and important, certainly they are, but notice that the message they carried was not those things first, it was Jesus first. The message that, and that was not only among the Jews, it was among Gentiles. So if you take a look at this extraordinary message in Acts the 17th chapter, where that Paul is addressing very Gentile folks, he's not trying to instruct them in issues about Moses or the law or even Abraham or whatever. He's teaching them, talking to them, instructing them about the things pertaining to God and to his Messiah, Jesus Christ, and the day that God has appointed in which he will judge the world by that man, Jesus. So I don't know. I certainly think that understanding of the Old Testament is helpful. It's important. But I'm with you in this sense, if I understand what you're saying rightly, and that is, I think that it is through the lens of the New Testament that we come to understand the significance of the Old.
Well, the way I always put it and did this morning is that the New Testament understands the Old Testament by reading it through the lens of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
And this is one problem with at least some segments in the Hebrew Roots movement, is they, in fact, interpret Jesus Christ through the lens of the Torah.
They've
got it completely backwards.
Mm, mm.
And they're going to miss certain things doing that.
David, let me ask you this. One of the things that I run into that, to me, as I hear people saying it, is a bit troubling. And that is, I hear Gentile Christians saying, well, you know, it doesn't hurt to keep the holy days. It doesn't hurt. And these are nice things to do and so on and so forth. But I'm always a bit troubled by Paul's language in Galatians, the 5th chapter, where he begins and he's talking about to the Galatians. He says to not be again, and the King James word is a great word. I think it's lovely, and that's entangled. Don't be entangled again with the yoke of bondage. So I don't know that it's a helpful thing or a pretty thing or a good thing for us to get ourselves, our families, and our friends involved in, when maybe it's going to lead us into these directions that are problematic. And for some, they're going to think, well, I must do these things. It's going to be a lot of confusion, would you think?
Yeah. Theoretically, in one regard, the fact that keeping the Sabbath, for example, or Passover is now a matter of indifference as to your standing before God, in theory, that would mean that it's not harmful or sinful to honor the festival. But on the other hand, since you now have the substance in what God has done in Jesus Christ, why would you want to?
Yeah.
On the other hand, Paul not only expressed concern there earlier in Galatians, he warned those who were going back to these things about the returning and putting themselves back under the stoichia, the elementary spirits of this age. And although normally you would see Paul using that term to refer to more pagan ideas and thoughts about demonics or pagan gods or whatever, Paul applied that to going back under the law, to going back under the elementary spirits of this age. And so on the one hand, these might be matters of indifference. On the other hand, there is potential danger there. And once you start down that path, where is it going to lead?
As you said in the beginning too, once you begin going down this road, it's very difficult to find your way back out, it seems like.
Well, that's what I found. Of course, maybe I'm just not very effective at convincing, persuading people to come back up. But it's been very difficult, and oftentimes the reactions I receive are very emotional.
Well, again, I like Paul's words there in Galatians 5 and I think verse 1. The English is saying, stand fast, therefore, because of the things he's been saying. Stand fast, hold fast to the liberty wherewith Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with that yoke of bondage.
Yeah.
So I think, and his references seem to me to be clearly the law,
yeah.
Which he now is able to say is indeed a yoke of bondage. And I would think that those folks who are troubled and don't want Paul's words to be a part of our New Testament, as you say, a minority of folks, they're recognizing that what Paul is saying really does prevent trusting in the law.
Again, that's one of the reasons, like I said, why we need to kick Paul out of the Bible.
That's right.
And one other thing in the feast days is this isn't always recognized, but in the Gospel of John, there's a number of things going on in the Gospel of John. One of the themes that's being worked out in the Gospel is the notion, the motif, that's my new big word for the month, the motif of Jesus as the fulfillment of the Jewish feast days. The Greek term that corresponds to feast or feast days occurs something like 17, 18 times in the Gospel of John. And he is portraying, just as he portrays Jesus as the greater, real, the genuine temple that replaces the old temple.
Yes, yes.
Jesus is also the fulfillment of the Passover, the Feast of Lights, and Tabernacles in the Gospel of John.
Yeah.
And so again, since Jesus has come with the substance, has been the fulfillment of these things, why return back to the shadows, to the things that were just types and glimpses and patterns of what was to come later, since now we have the realities?
I love it. We've come to the real realities, the true things that all of this other was simply pointing to. And so why not rejoice in the reality? Okay, tell me this. You have a wonderful website. What is your website address if someone would like to get in contact with you and enjoy these things?
It's just www.gospeltoallnationsplural.org.
Okay, that's gospel, G-O-S-P-E-L-T-O. Gospel to all nations.
nations.org.
Great stuff. Okay.
And you're safe there. I don't have an online store. I can't sell you anything.
Not a thing. But and if someone is enjoying what you're saying, they can call you or contact you that way. Or if they want to fuss at you, I guess they could still call and fuss.
Well, that's why my email's there, so they can email
me
instead of physically visit me in Cass Stone.
All right. David, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.
We'll look forward to seeing you
again.